Hello, Screeters. I find myself being intrigued by some current discussions in the anchorites sphere or environment or whatever. What the anchorites are saying on all their various podcasts and even in the home of the anchorites, the Audio Dungeon Discord. I have an interesting episode coming up for us today. I believe I have solved much of the issue, and it's a wholly different topic that creates all of these other problems, questions, ideas, thoughts, confrontations, all of it. I also have some call-ins concerning PrEP from Carl Rodriguez of the Geomologist, and using IP, intellectual property, in your games from Spezbaby and Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I feel very decisive today. I was told that I'm in the water section of Libra as opposed to the air section. So I can be way more decisive just like a Scorpio, and it's okay. But I don't know. What I do know is today is August 7th, 2023. I am Jason Hobbs, and this is Random Screed.
Hey, Jason, Carl here. I wanted to call in about prep and prepping for games and kind of what I do, but in a way I feel like, you know, I'll read the adventure, but then I'll put it down for a while, and then maybe we don't run it or whatever. Sometimes I feel like I overprep. And recently, like, I've done what Jason Connerly described, which is like, oh man, I gotta run a game, prep at the last minute. But I had a lot of fun the other day in a game that was kind of spontaneous. So our regular game, the Star Wars game, I kind of canceled it because two players at the last minute said they couldn't go, which is in and of itself annoying. And then we decided with the other players who were coming, I didn't know what they're going to play. I gave them a couple options, kind of a call of a shoe. Interesting game concept. Call of Cthulhu, probably multi-session scenario. We're not calling it a one-shot because it probably would take... Normally, like, a one-shot for my regular groups takes, like, two sessions, probably. And then I gave them that choice where they'd all play, like, criminals. Or I gave them a choice to continue our Hyperborea game, and they decided on Hyperborea. And I'm like, okay, well, what are we going to do? It kind of depended on what actions they were going to take. They'd just stolen some jewel for this guy, and there had been, like, some... The guy's man who was in the group got killed, and another player character died, and they were trying to decide where they're going to take it. And the person who hired him had actually lowballed him for the gem. So I was kind of decided, well, what do you guys want to do? And when they decided, then I kind of everything else after that was kind of, was random encounters, and I had a great time doing it, and it was all kind of unplanned, and that was really fun. And that's probably why I like games like Hyperborea, even Call of Cthulhu. AD&D, right? That I can run with my eyes closed and both hands behind my back. Anyway, I guess there was something to be said about spontaneity and letting things kind of roll. Anyway, thanks for the podcast, and yeah, I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for calling in, Carl. I find it interesting. I don't think there's any random encounters in the Hyperborea book. I'm almost positive there's not in the first or second edition, but I could be wrong about third edition. He has bloated it as it has gone on along. And I, concerning Hyperborea, my only real regret is that I don't play it enough. So, anybody out there running some Hyperborea that would like to have a player, let me know, and we will get to it. Otherwise, I find your prep interesting, and hey, that's the beauty of improv. It's good, but I think the things that are lost when you're doing improv is connectivity, continuity, and possibly consistency. So there are the three C's that are lost when you do a lot of improv game. Continuity, because you may not remember things that happened, so it's harder to, you know, keep it all in a line. Connectivity, because, you know, we are, I think it's very similar to continuity, actually. We're connecting bits and pieces of story elements, and when we're improvising them versus creating them up front, yes, it's a more dynamic, organic, and situation for the story as it is being written. Afterwards, maybe we can figure it out. I don't know. Consistency for rules, because if we're improvising, we're not necessarily prepared as we could be, so we may be making up different rules for the same situation. This kind of ties into the main topic that I want to talk about later, so for now, I'll just thank Carl again. Thanks, Carl.
Hey, Jason, the other Jason, just listened to your latest show. Great to hear you back on the air. As far as IP and all that crazy stuff goes, honestly, I don't pay it any mind. You know, I'll let the players know, hey, we're playing in a world inspired by this, but there may be changes, and just roll with it. The closest thing I'll come to is Conan, and I use Barbarians Lemuria, and I set my Conan world. For source books, I'll use Robert E. Howard stories, and I'll use the Marvel comics by Roy Thomas. And so Marvel did a book a while back, just a comic book, the official handbook to the Marvel Conan universe or something like that, and you can find it pretty cheap. And that's a good source book. So I'll use that, and then just knowledge of the Robert E. Howard books, and that's my Hyboria, right? And, yeah, but nothing's locked in because they're not playing Conan himself. And if they need a year, I can set a year, but the things are vague enough that you can put adventures in there without a big deal. So, that's my answer for canon. But if I was going to play, like when we played MERP back in the day, Middle Earth and stuff, we, just kind of, well, that's not true. We did before the War of the Ring, or we did after War of the Ring. We played a lot of after the War of the Ring, and crazy stuff happened. But, yeah, I'm not a big fan of running games where you're running into characters from the books or characters from the stories. I know some people like to do that. I played in some games where Arlen was running the One Ring, and Arlen Walker, or Alive from Poems Wasteland, and we bumped into characters and things, and that was fine. It was cool. And I think Carl's talked about running games where he's run games where they bumped into named characters and some apocryphal Star Wars stories that I'm not familiar with. But, yeah, for the most part, I'm not a big fan of doing that. I'm not out of my way to get them to bump into famous people in the stories. I'm just kind of putting them in that world. But typically, I'm more likely to run in, quote-unquote, generic sword and sorcery world, and that way there isn't a IP issue at all. Hope that helps. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you to Jason Connerly of the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. So a lot of little bits in there that I found relatively intriguing. Number one, is after the War of the Ring to you the Fourth Age, or does the Fourth Age of Middle Earth not really start until the death of the King Aragorn? I don't know. Inquiring minds want to know. Let us know. Number two, why is Carl's game apocryphal? Aren't all games apocryphal? Because they don't really tie into canon. I was really, really interested by your particular choice of words there. Number three, I have never heard of the Marvel Universe Handbook of the Conan setting. I find that very intriguing. And also, that you only use Roy Thomas's comics. So, none of the Dark Horse, none of the Savage Sword, even though Roy Thomas did some of the Savage Sword, I believe. Also intrigued by all that. So, lots of stuff there. feel free to answer any and all of it. I find it interesting. I don't know if the listeners will. And in all reality, it may not matter. Just kidding, Screeters. Love ya. Thanks again for the call, Jason. Oh, and thanks for the talk about IP. Today, I don't even remember what my IP question was. So all you guys out there can be yelling into the nether and saying, you dumbass Hobbs. It was the IP thing about this, about you preparing to run your TOA. And I really would like to hear more about IP, like maybe in a setting concerning like Forgotten Realms or something. I love that niche aspect of it. And I mean, we did kind of talk about this, I think, in the past. Or perhaps Peter's about to.
Hi, Hobbs. It's Peter, also known as Space Baby. I'm calling in regards to the question about IP and how you prep it. IP, to me, I prep the same way as I prep a new game with a new game world, pretty much. Often, it will be using a published introductory adventure first. I often find that that works better in both regards because it's usually written for how the authors of the game think the game should be played. That's not always the be-all, end-all, but it gives you a good starting point on what the characters are supposed to do. But then, afterwards, with IP and also, you know, published worlds, I will often try and find that little piece, that little thing, kind of like you suggested, that little part of the world that I really like, and then expand on it. But I'm never really wed completely to the IP. I don't find limitations to be limitations. They're guidelines. You know, if there's a part of the world that I don't really like, then I'll change it. Now that might really bother some of the IP heads on the bigger ones like Star Wars or Star Trek or what have you, but I think it makes for a more fun game. So that's how I deal with it. Usually an intro adventure, and then I will find a little piece to branch off into. All right, thanks. Bye.
And there is Peter, or as he says, Spaze Baby. I'm not sure how S-P-E-Z becomes Spaze, but it might be a Canadian thing. As for this advice and response from Peter, I guess, like he even said, it's very similar to what I probably do. But I do have a significant interest in how many people actually used introductory adventures. I never do. And I would also like to comment, I shouldn't say never, I guess. I have, but not very often. Even in We Deal in Lead, where I didn't really know what was going on and I wasn't sure how to do it, I had always planned on using the introductory adventure, but I've ran it 3 or 4 or 5 times maybe and still never used it. Mostly because I felt like it had enough meat in it that it would really be a better adventure if you ran a little bit before that and prepared people, especially people who don't necessarily know the Gunslinger / Dark Tower stuff very well. And the last thing I wanted to comment was the IP heads. Isn't it interesting how people might be upset about your particular take on an IP? And we see this all the time in movies and books and comic books and the other iterations of an individual's take on someone else's IP. And maybe we even saw it sometime before that in comic books when writers changed. So interesting. The information that can come out just from communicating with a good idea. I can't remember the terminology Anthony from Casting Shadows uses, but he's used it on this specific podcast. And now,
in half a mile, use the left 2 lanes to turn left onto South Orchard Road.
There you go, some sat-nav, man. Anyway, what I was going to say is Call of Bushido. Is that Japanese samurai age Call of Cthulhu? I don't know. Carl Rodriguez, time to run that shit. Thanks for calling.
Use the left two lanes to turn left onto South.
If he is up or down, his podcast still comes round. Hobbs is in his van. Don't turn off that sat nav, man. Random screed, don't know what you get, but it's what you need.
What is it that Hobbs wanted to talk about? So, like I sort of hinted at in the introduction, there's been quite a few contentious things floating around the Anchorites podcastosphere. Podosphere?
Continue on South Orchard Road for 3/4 of a mile.
I always kind of think of a pod as a sphere. So that's like redundant, isn't it? I don't know. Let me know. Anyway, like training has been a hot topic on the Pink Phantom's show. If you haven't listened to the Pink Phantom, you should go check out his podcast. Another thing has been...
In a quarter mile, turn left onto US 34 West East Veterans Parkway.
GP for experience, gold for experience on the Whispering GM. If you haven't listened to the Whispering GM, you should go check out his podcast. Maybe we'll just talk
turn
about those.
Turn left onto US 34 West East Veterans Parkway.
Training.
Don't turn right onto Station Drive.
Training has been kind of a hot topic as well. Maybe I just said that. I don't know. Stupid GPS. Anyway, I think a lot of this has to do with something that we really probably haven't talked about in the anchor sphere. So here's a new topic for y'all. What do you think of the spectrum or the line, the sliding scale between different types of GMs? This is actually like a two-aspect topic. First of all, I'm going to talk about this sliding scale. On one side, at the extreme, you have the GM's GM. And this guy... Or girl, or person, or whatever. AI, I don't know. Their particular style of game really uses very strict timekeeping. It requires training. It's a very good story. Very, very procedural. And maybe has made some changes in the house rules to make the game even harder. It's almost like playing the game, whatever game it is, on hard mode. And in theory, a lot of people like this idea. It's like, oh, they use...
Turn right onto Station Drive.
They use equipment that can break, or your weapons can break, or...
Take the next right onto O'Brien Way.
They always use training... Death at zero.
In 800 feet, turn left onto Station Drive.
Heavy resource management, weight in coins for encumbrance. You have to buy all of your equipment, no gear pack starting up. You have to do everything very specifically. And on the other side is the player's GM. And this person fudges dice. He... no training. Joe Richter comes to mind as the player's GM, and maybe myself as a GM's GM, because in a lot of ways I think my games are more like that. And the other point is another piece of this. When you're running a game, do you really run the game you want to play? And would other people, your peers and those that you've gamed with in the past, say that, yep, the way this person plays, he would like this sort of game? In other words, do we see each other the same way as we see ourselves?
And in 400 feet, turn left onto Station Drive.
How is that represented in the type of games that we play and run? Which is also another concept of the subset of do...
Take the next left onto Station Drive, then turn right.
Are GMs playing when they play, or are players only playing?
Take the next right, then turn right.
Oh, shoot. So these are all concepts that I kind of want to detail. And maybe I should take them in separate segments, not necessarily... Oh, shoot. Not, I'm driving trying to find a Taco Bell. It's not always easy, people. It's not always easy to delineate these things and keep them in order on a podcast when you're driving around looking for a place to eat. But anyway, these are the topics I'm proposing. Let's get into it.
Yay!
All right, Screeters, this show is already 20 minutes long. I don't think I'm going to be able to detail all those things. In fact, I may have to pull a Webster and write some of this shit down that I'm talking about. I want to iterate this one single point, and then I'll try and cover those other things in future podcasts. And I welcome any feedback about what I've already spoken about and what your thoughts are concerning that. This point that I want to bring across is, it is my belief, I posit, that the majority of the people listening to this podcast are game masters. They're most likely the forever GMs of their group. If they're not the forever GMs, then you're probably in a group that shifts around game masters. So it makes sense. This is why we discuss and delineate and posit and do all those things about games, because players who aren't GMs or rarely GM are just going to be fine with whatever. And if they're not, then they probably become GMs, or they cross this invisible barrier from the table, their individual table, and seek out what other tables are doing. So I want to say that the majority of the people I'm talking to are likely GMs. And not only talking to, but talking about. And I want to add another player GM. Carl Rodriguez is definitely a player GM. Jose Lucario, a big time player GM. GM's GM. Eric Hoffman. Paul Wolf. Myself. Taylor from Whispering GM. Thaddeus Moore. The list goes on and on. But no sense in mentioning more at this moment. So let me know what you think about these different thoughts and ideas, and maybe give me some fodder for the next show. As always, I appreciate the call-ins and the listeners. And it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Get lost in a garden.